The Rambam writes in the seventh perek of Hilchos Tshuva. Al Toima, don't say she'ein tshuva ela mi'averis she'esh behem maisa. Don't think that a person only has to do tshuva on those averis which involve actions. Kagoin, znus, or gezel, or gneva. Elo kishem she'tzorich odom loshuv me'elu. In the same way that a person is obligated to do tshuva if he does, or if he's over, on any of the isurim that exist in the Torah, kachu tzorich lechapes b'deis rois. So, a person also has to examine his deis rois. The Rambam uses the word deo as synonymous with what we would call midas. A person has to examine his behavior, a person has to examine his midas. And a person is obligated to do tshuva in reference to any negative midas that he has. And then the Rambam gives a lengthy list of the possible midas rois, the possible bad midas that a person can have. For example, anger, jealousy, the desire for money, the desire for covet, the taiva for food, and various other examples of what the Rambam sees as being midos rois. Hakol, on all these things, tzorich lachzor b'tshuva, a person has to be chazor b'tshuva. Ve'elo avonos, and these avonos, the avonos of midas, koshim, are more severe than mitzvahs loisase which appear in the Torah. Because, says the Rambam, a mitzvahs loisase which the Torah says that a person shouldn't steal, even if a person is nichshel in stealing, it's easier to get over it because being nichshel in stealing is not a habit. Unless you're a kleptomaniac, but the issa of stealing is not a habit, it's a one-time avera the person does in a moment of weakness. However, says the Rambam, when it comes to midas, bizman she'odom nishka be'elu, when a person becomes submerged in midas rois, kosher hu lifresh mihem, it's difficult for him to change. And that's what the Pasuk means when the Pasuk says, when Yeshayahu HaNavi says to Klal Yisrael, Yazev Rosh HaDarkai, get up and get your life together and make a change. Says the Rambam, Yeshayahu HaNavi wasn't talking about whether you are keeping mitzvahs asay or whether you are not keeping mitzvahs leisase. What Yeshayahu HaNavi was talking about was midas. In other words, the Rambam is emphasizing a point here. And the point that the Rambam is emphasizing is that it's not enough for a person to do what the Torah tells him to do and to refrain from what the Torah tells him not to do. A person has to realize that the obligation that he has doesn't stop at doing certain things and not doing other things. The obligation that a person has is to ensure that his everyday behavior, the way in which he lives, the way in which he acts, how he relates to what's going on around him, is in a way which, in very simple down-to-earth language, would be called menschlich. That one should act in a correct manner. The Gemara says in Avodah Zarah that Sefer Bereishis, and we've mentioned this before, is called Sefer HaYosha, the Book of the Upright. And the Gemara says, my Sefer HaYosha, why is Sefer Bereishis called Sefer HaYosha? Says the Gemara, because Zeh Sefer Avram Yitzchak V'Yankev, because this is a book which tells us the biographies of Avram and Yitzchak and Yaakov, Shenikra'u Yesharim, who were considered to be Yesharim. They were straight people. They were correct people. The Netziv, in his introduction to his Pirush on Chumash, writes, Ikka ma'losam shala'avas. If you want to know in what lay the root of the greatness and the milus of the avos of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, milvad mikach shehayu oved Hashem gedolim. Forget about the fact that they were great tzaddikim and they were great oved Hashem. Heim hayu misnagim, says the Netziv, the way in which they used to act, their everyday social interaction, their everyday behavior, b'derech eretz. They acted in a way which could be described as being with derech eretz. Im kol boy olam, and they did this with everybody. Afilu im goyim mechuarim, even with low-class goyim. They also acted in a correct manner. Mikol mokum, wherever they were, however they related to other people, says the Netziv, it was with two criteria. The first criteria was ba'ava. The first criteria was not to offend other people, not to make other people upset. And the second criteria was choshilu tevosam, to worry about the other person, to do what's good for the other person. If you look in this week's parasha, you find something very interesting. Yosef is in jail. He's in jail, and the pasuk describes a certain situation. And the way in which the situation is described in the Torah is the following. It's described in a couple of psukim. And the Torah says the following. Vayovei aleihem Yosef baboker. Yosef got up in the morning and got together with all the other prisoners in the jail. In other words, they're all sitting down to eat breakfast together. Vayaroisom. And he sees them, he looks at them. Vehinom zayafim. And they all look very upset. Vayishal esrisei parei asher itoi b'mishmar beis adonov leimer. And he asks, these people are sitting in jail, who at one point in time held position in the court of Pharaoh, and who now are sitting in jail, Madua pneichem roim hayoim. Why do you look so upset this morning? Vayoim roilov, and they answer him back, and they say, Chaloim cholamnu, we dreamt a dream, upaisa ein oisei, and we've got no one to interpret this dream. Vayoim aleim Yosef, and Yosef says to them, Halayla leikim pisreinim, God can supply the interpretation of dreams. Saprunali, tell me what you dreamt, and I'll attempt with Siyata Dishmaya, with the help of God, to be able to interpret the dreams for you. Now, this was an integral part of the unfolding story, because through the interpretation of these dreams, he gets a name, or he makes a name for himself in jail as being somebody who knows how to interpret dreams, and therefore at a later point in time, when Pharaoh has a dream which he can't understand, and he's looking for someone to interpret the dream, he gets told by one of his former cellmates that I had a guy in jail with me who knew how to interpret dreams, and they bring Yosef out, and that's how Yosef ends up to be a prime figure in Egyptian society, which allows him later to bring the family down to Egypt, etc., etc., etc. But the immediate question that comes to mind is, the Torah is not a work of literature. Torah doesn't spend words, time, and effort on filling in on literary background. This whole description here of Yosef turning up for breakfast with the other guys in the jail, and seeing that they look depressed, and asking them, why are you looking depressed? And they telling him, no, we're looking depressed because we had a dream and we don't know how to interpret the dream, seems to be totally superfluous. That's not the point of the exercise. You can say, perhaps, that the Torah wants to stress the fact that the automatic, immediate reflex of Yosef, or the reaction of Yosef, is the Lekim Pisrenus, and that's telling us something about the Milo of Yosef, and therefore the Torah wanted to bring it in. But who cares that these guys looked upset, didn't look upset, Yosef saw that they looked upset? That's not the point of the exercise. The point of the exercise is, and that's what the Torah should have said, the Torah should have said that these guys had a dream and they didn't understand what the dream was about, and Yosef came and Yosef interpreted the dream. Why the background setting of them looking upset and Yosef asking them, why are you upset? The answer seems to be the following. That notwithstanding the fact that Yosef, sitting in jail, was still Yosef HaTzadik, and notwithstanding the fact that Yosef, sitting in jail, was being Isaac in Iskei Shemayim, his mind was somewhere up there. And notwithstanding the fact that there was a vast difference between the personality and the spiritual personality of Yosef and the non-existent spiritual personality, or the negative spiritual personality of the other people who were sitting in jail with him, and notwithstanding the fact that Chazal say that he basically was running the jail, that the people in charge of the jail had given him a position of responsibility within the jail, notwithstanding all that, and one can imagine the type of people that were there in the Egyptian jail at that point in time, when Yosef got up every morning, first thing he did was ask the people around him, how's your day going? How do you feel today? The first thing that Yosef did when he got up in the morning was to look around at the people that were around him and look at the expressions of the people around him and say to them, you're looking depressed, maybe I can help you. You're looking upset, tell me what you're upset about, maybe I can help you out of the situation. Because what the Torah is trying to tell us here is that irrespective of who you are, irrespective of how knowledgeable you are, irrespective of who you are, irrespective of how much of a tzaddik you are, irrespective of where you're holding spiritually, stage one, the basis, the most important, is be a mensch to people around you, even if the people around you happen to be jailbirds. That's irrelevant. Your obligation is to be a mensch. And the Torah devotes two psukim telling us the importance of simple menschlichkeit, simple midas tovas, of simple basic human behavior. The Gemara in Chulin and Daf Zayin says over a very interesting story. The Gemara says that there were a group of Jews who were captured and they were taken away by bandits and they were going to be killed, but these bandits set a price on their lives and said that if the Jewish community would be able to come up with a certain amount of money, then they would free these Jews. So a sum of money was put together in order to free these Jews, and the Gemara says that this sum of money was given to Reb Pinchas ben Yoyah, and Reb Pinchas ben Yoyah was sent to fulfill this mitzvah of Pidyon Shvuim to redeem these Jews that they shouldn't be killed. And the Gemara relates that he's traveling, he's on the way, he's traveling to this place in order to redeem these Jews from captivity, and there's a river on the way, and he can't cross the river because the river has a strong flow of water, and there's no way in which he can get across the water. The river's name, says the Gemara, was called Ginoi, the river Ginoi. And the river Ginoi was blocking him from carrying on his journey. So the Gemara relates that Reb Pinchas ben Yoyah turned round to the river, and he said to the river, will you stop and divide the water in order that I should be able to go across. And the river says, no. Why should I stop? It's my function in the world. My function in the world, I was created in this world in order that there should be water here and that the water should flow. So, Rav Pinchas ben Yoyah says to the river, you're doing your job, but I'm doing my job. My job at this point in time is that I have to go and free these captives. And I can't free these captives if I can't cross the river. And seeing that I can't cross the river, so it's your job to give in to me and to allow me to cross. So the Gemara maintains that the river was a London, and the river turned back to Rav Pinchas ben Yoyah and said to Rav Pinchas ben Yoyah, no, you're not right. You're going to do a mitzvah of pidyon shvuim. But we don't know if you're going to be successful or you're not going to be successful. If you are successful, then you'll be fulfilling what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants you to do. If you're not successful, then you won't be doing what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants you to do. But I'm vadai doing what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants me to do because the Ribbono Shel Olam wants me that the river should flow. So therefore, I'm suffik meitim midei vadai. I'm vadai doing ritzayim bayri. You're a suffik whether you're doing your ritzayim bayri or not. Therefore, I've got no reason to stop for you. So Rav Pinchas ben Yoyah says to the river, if you don't stop and divide yourself up and let me go through, I'm going to ensure that you dry up and you'll never have any water again. And the river says, oh, okay, no problem. If so, you can cross. And the river allows him to cross. Says the Gemara, at that particular point in time, there were two other people trying to cross the river as well. One was a Jew who was on his way to grind flour, to grind up wheat for flour in order to bake matzahs for Pesach. So Rav Pinchas ben Yoyah turns round to the river and says to the river, I want you now to split again in order that this Jew should be able to go across. And the river says, why? And Rav Pinchas ben Yoyah says, because I know what he's going for. He's going to grind wheat in order to make flour, in order to bake matzahs, and therefore he's going to do Ritzayim Kainai. And seeing he's going to do Ritzayim Kainai, therefore, you have to split your water. Says the river, okay, fine, no problem. And the Jew crosses. There's a third guy standing there. Says the Gemara, he's an Arab. He's an Arab businessman, Seich Aravi, Rashi says. There's an Arab, there's a guy standing there, a Goyish businessman was standing there. And Rav Pinchas ben Yoyah says to the river, split that he should come across as well. And the river says, why? And Rav Pinchas ben Yoyah says, because is that the way you treat somebody who's your traveling partner? You leave him behind? And the river says, no problem. And the river splits. So the Mefoshim and the Gemara, look what happened here. Rav Pinchas ben Yoyah wants to go across because he's going to pidyon shvuim. He has to get into this terrible fight with the river. And the river doesn't want to let him go across. And the only way that the river agrees in the end of the day that he can go across is when he curses out the river and he says, if you don't let me go across, then I'm going to curse you out that you're going to dry up and you're never again going to be able to have water. Then the river lets him go across. When it comes to the Jews going to be to make flour for matzahs for Pesach, he also has to argue with the river. Doesn't have to argue as hard, but he still has to argue with the river. But when he turns around to the river and he says, let the Arab across. Why? Because the Arab is my fellow traveler. The river says, yeah, you're right. Because that's not coming with a halachic argument. Rav Pinchas ben Yoyah came with a philosophical halachic argument. You're doing Ritzayim Kainah, I'm doing Ritzayim Kainah, my Ritzayim Kainah is more than your Ritzayim Kainah. Answers in fact the river, I'm a Vada, you're a Suffolk, they're getting this whole Londus. And it takes some time until he slugs up the river. And in fact he doesn't even slug him up, he just curses him out and the river gets scared. When it comes to the Jew, the same thing. He's doing Ritzayim Kainah, you're doing Ritzayim Kainah, his Ritzayim Kainah, the Vada, the same thing. When it comes to the Arab, the river doesn't argue. Why? Because what does he say to the river? Menschlichkeit. He's the guy who's traveling with me. Is this the way you treat the guy who's traveling with you? Leave him behind? You cross and say to him goodbye? You're bad luck. I know how to deal with the river and you don't. No, the guy's traveling with you. You're a mensch. You take him with. Yosef comes home and Ashes Potiphera is trying to seduce him. The Pasuk says that she grabbed hold of him and he ran away. Vayazav bigdoy biyodo. He left his clothing in her hand. Vayonas, and he fled. Vayotachus, and he went outside. Leaving the beggar by her was dangerous. Why? Because it doesn't look good. And in fact, she used it against him. And the end of the story was that he ended up in jail. Why did he end up in jail? Because she finally started up with me. Varaya. I got left with his clothing. If he would have grabbed the clothing back and taken the clothing with him, then he could have argued, lay it down. The whole story didn't take place. He just made it up. And Chazal say that Potiphar wasn't an idiot. He knew exactly where his wife was holding ethically and morally. But he didn't have any brera, say Chazal, because she had a hard and fast raya that Yosef had started up with her because she was holding a piece of his clothing. Says the Ramban, why didn't he grab the clothing back? The Ramban says, Lichvoid gvirtei leirotza lehitziyei miyoda bekeiche agodl mimeno vaheise eise meyoda. Because it's not menschlich. You don't attack a woman with force. It's not the dumb thing. It's not menschlich, guys. And therefore, he leaves the begodim in her hands and he ends up in jail. He ends up with the whole story. The Gemara says in Brachas, Tachlis Chochma Tshuva Umaisim Tovim. The whole point of learning is that it should end up in Maisim Tovim. And the Gemara goes on to describe that a person can learn, but if he's learning and he's still acting like an animal, then there was no point in the whole exercise of his learning. With all the chshivas of Talmud Torah, it's meaningless if it doesn't end up in a practical menschlichkeit. There was a Jew in New York, his name was the Blujiva Rebbe. It was an Odom Godel Moed. The Blujiva Rebbe was a survivor of the concentration camps. The Blujiva Rebbe got interviewed in the last years of his life by a woman who was writing a history of the Holocaust by the name of Professor Eliach. And she taped all the different various anecdotes that he told her of his experience in the concentration camps. And she later, this was in fact a doctoral thesis that she did, but eventually she published this as a separate book on its own of stories that she'd heard from the Blujiva Rebbe. And the Blujiva Rebbe told her the following story, that in Blujov, which was on the Polish-German border, actually the Galician German border, there were German goyim who lived there in Blujov. And he had a neighbor who was a German goy. And the Blujiva Rebbe said the following. Every single morning, he said, when he left his house at 7 o'clock in the morning to go to shul, this goy would leave his house in order to go to work. And they passed by each other every single morning. And the Blujiva Rebbe said that every morning when I passed by to him, I used to say, Guten Morgen, mein Herr. Good morning, sir. And the goy, he said, answered him back, Guten Morgen, Herr Rabbiner. Good morning, Rabbi. He said this was in the early 30s. He said in 1941, in the concentration camp which he was in, a Jew was caught trying to escape. Besides killing the guy who tried to escape, they decided that they're going to kill 100 Jews. And they pulled out 100 Jews, and they shot them in front of a firing squad one by one. And there was a German officer, he said he was in command of this firing squad, and they brought the Jew out, tied him up to a pole, and the officer said, fire, and they fired. And he says, he was number 80-something. And they brought him out, and they tied him up to the pole, and he looked at the German officer who was giving the order to fire, and he said that the man looked very familiar to him. And all of a sudden, he chapped who the man was. And he said to the German officer, a guten Morgen, mein Herr. And instinctively, the German officer said to him, a guten Morgen, Herr Rabbiner. And then he chapped who it was, and the German officer said to him, untie him and send him back. So the Blujewa Rebbe, can anybody estimate the power of saying good morning to a goy? The Chofetz Chaim says the following mashal. The Chofetz Chaim says that there was a wealthy man who had a large house and a large garden, and he had to go away on business for 4 months. And he was frightened that the house would get into disarray, that the garden would get overgrown. So he hired a gardener who was also a good cleaner and a good odd job man, and he said to him the following: I want to hire you for 4 months that you should look after the house, look after the garden. Now, sit down, take a piece of paper and a pen. I'm going to dictate to you a list of exactly what you have to do every day. And he dictated to the man exactly what he has to do in the house every day, and what he has to do in the garden every day. And he said, what I want you to do is every morning when you get up, you have the list, you see the list, you know what to do, and everything will be fine. And the gardener said, no problem. And the man comes back after 4 months, and he finds that the house is a total mess, and the garden, don't ask what it looks like, it looks like a jungle. And he calls in the guy that he hired, and he says to him, Ribbono Shel Olam, what's going on? And the man looks at him and says, what do you mean? He says, but I hired you to do a job. What happened? He said, I did my job. And the house owner says to him, what do you mean you did your job? He said, I did my job. Every morning I got up and I read your list. Says the Chofetz Chaim, that's us. Every morning we get up and we read the Ribbono Shel Olam's list. And it stops at that. We read the list. We learn something. One guy learns 10 minutes, one guy learns for an hour, one guy learns for 2 hours, 5 hours. Here you are. You read the list. Reading the list isn't the point of the exercise. The point of the exercise is, where does it go to? Where does the reading the list get you to? What does reading the list result in? If reading the list doesn't result in a change in human behavior, and we're not talking about human behavior in terms of tzidkas. We're not talking about human behavior in terms of mitzvahs. We're not chas v'shalom, asking anybody to actually daven, or to actually have kavana when they put on a pair of tefillin. That would be going much too far. Not demanding of you. We understand where you're coming from. We understand that your mother stopped nursing you too early. We understand all your problems. Chas v'shalom. It's not what we're asking. But what about basic human behavior? What about the fact that you sit in a room, 40 people, and there may be one guy who can't take cigarette smoke. So go smoke somewhere else. No, I have to smoke here. Why? Because it's hashchosa and midas, that's what it is. It's hashchosa with midas. You can learn 18 hours a day. If you're a mushchos in midas, your learning is not getting you anywhere. It's a purely intellectual exercise which has no meaning whatsoever. Simple question. It's very difficult in today's day and age to find people who you can honestly say about them that they're at a starvation level that people were when the Second World War ended and the American army entered Bergen-Belsen and freed the concentration camp inmates. I don't think that today you're going to find somebody who's at that level of starvation. Until you enter the dining room of Lev Aryeh at lunchtime or supper. And then you see people who obviously have been starved out of their minds for years. Because they're acting like a bunch of animals when, if you want to call it food, I don't know how you're going to describe it, arrives at certain points in the day. One would think that one hasn't eaten for years. Where's the Menschlichkeit? Where's the Menschlichkeit of the fact that there are other people around? How can you, a person be an animal to the degree, and I see this day in, day out. Day in, day out I see this. When you walk into a dining room, the first guy there fills his plate up as if this is not a yeshiva of 43 guys, this is a yeshiva of one guy. He takes 42 portions, but he's a mensch. He's a mensch. He thinks about other people. He leaves over one portion for the other 41 guys because he's a mensch. Do you know, somebody writing a doctoral thesis would be under the impression that in this yeshiva, there isn't a guy who ever in his life experienced a piece of meat in a chont. Never experienced it, never knew what it was. And it's such a new thing to him that he can't hold himself back on a Thursday night, right, from eating, right, chont, and from fishing around for the cat's kishkas that they put in instead of meat, right, and taking everything that there is. Why? What about somebody else? There's somebody else around as well. Do you know, I want to say a chiddush that a lot of you guys don't know. Many, many, many years ago, I think historically it was 1400 and something, a guy locked himself up in a room for many, many, many months. And he came up with a fascinating idea which revolutionized the world. He came up with this idea that you can construct, at those times they did it out of wood, eventually they did it out of metal, now they do it out of plastic, but he came up with this idea. At one end it's long, so you can hold it, and the other end it has like four prongs on it. And you can eventually put it into a piece of food and pick the food out without actually putting your dirty hands all over the food and eat the food. It's called a fork. He also invented something else, which we won't go into, which is called a knife. Is it so difficult to pick up a knife and fork, right? Or do you think that it's a mitzvah to infect everybody else with every unknown disease that you have? That it's a mechiv, that you've got to eat with your hands? Is that a chiv? Basic menschlichkeit. What's the point in trying the chalal to get somewhere? In terms of spirituality, in terms of ruchnias, in terms of davening, in terms of learning, right? When the basics are missing. There are guys who want to sleep. There are people who believe in going to bed at a certain time. I know it's difficult to understand. There are people who go to sleep at night and are awake at day. There are such people in the world. It's a chiddush, I know. But there are people whose Seder HaYom is at night, they sleep, by day they're awake. There are certain historical, sociological, practical reasons for it. One of them being that it's light by day and it's dark by night, so it's more functional to be awake by day, but we're not going to go into that. Right? That's too deep for you guys to understand. I'm not asking you to philosophize about that. But there are almost certain people who want to sleep. There are neighbors who want to sleep. So is it so difficult that you have to speak at the top of your voice into your cell phone when you're actually only speaking to directory inquiries or the clock, but you're calling her Patricia, so everybody should think, who knows what it is, right? We know, we've been around a long time, we have experience, we know exactly who you're talking to, right? You're not talking to anybody, right? In fact, the only reason why there was a guy, he was actually an ex-yeshivabach, who invented the fact that if you press a certain button on the phone, it rings. Your own phone rings is that people should think your girlfriend's calling you. Right? That was the whole, he was next to Shiva Bacher. That was the whole concept. We're not talking to anybody anyway, but why do you have to talk at the top of your voice? Anyway, it's a virtual exercise, the whole thing. Right? Why do you have to slam doors? The answer is because there's no Menschlichkeit. Basic human behavior. Nobody here is starving. Nobody here, believe me, if anybody here is going to die of starvation, we will give them an answer, an infusion, free of charge. Believe me, if Atala says, and he's an Atalanik, he knows. If he says, look, the guy's going to die unless he gets a $23 sandwich at this point in time, right? Before he eats the sandwich. You're not about dying after eating the sandwich. It's nothing to do with that. You deal with Lansman. But before he eats the sandwich, then we won't give you the free sandwich. Stickle menschlichkeit. If you see that there's no coffee here, if you see that there's no sugar, why is it always the same guy? Why is it always the same guy who has to go and worry about it? Why is it always the same guy who has to worry about whether there is enough food, whether there isn't enough food? Why is it always the same guy who bears responsibility and everybody else acts like an animal? Everybody say, basic menschlichkeit.
Joke when you said about the